So, welcome to episode one of Production Life, here with Michael Martinez.
That's me.
Yep. And we got a chance to, or I got a chance to interview Chris Rupert from Name Tag Films. You worked with him a little bit. You got a chance to listen to an interview, kind of go through it. What was one thing that stuck out to you?
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing that stood out for me the most was him talking about bringing something unique. You know, that way you can make sure to keep, you know, working with those same people.
Yeah. I feel like one phrase to me that stuck out was plus one everything. Like,
exactly.
Just one little thing to every job. That was what really stuck out. And kind of the overall theme for this whole episode was getting hired more than once.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's had JCPenney for, gosh, I think he said 16 years maybe?
I think that's 15, what he
16?
Said, yeah.
It's like having a client that long. Like, I can't imagine that. I was 9, 10? I was like 10 years old when he started working with, like, that's ridiculous, awesome.
Yeah.
But it's like, I want to have relationships like that with my clients.
Yeah, I think that says a lot to how he's able to be professional with them, but at the same time, bring something unique every time that he works with them.
Yeah.
So that he keeps it fresh and so that they can keep rehiring him.
Yeah. And I mean, on the flip side, going back to talking about, like you and me do a lot of work for agencies and production houses and stuff like that.
Yep.
So it's not exactly direct to client, really.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny, though, is you see these parallels where there's so much stuff that goes together where it's like the same way that he keeps his clients, it's the same way that we could keep our clients.
Exactly. And you guys talked about this where basically as a freelancer, you are a brand. You're basically branding yourself as a production company would to agencies and clients because you have to put, you know, your best self out there. In my experience, when I find like a couple of, you know, people that really like me, like my brand, I get a lot of work through them, and work garners more work.
Yeah. Well, and there's this relationship and appreciation for each other that comes out of that.
This is a very team driven you know, profession that we're in. Everybody has their specific job that they're supposed to do, and just trusting in that and trusting, you know, other people to do the jobs that they're, you know, that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and get to the interview. Awesome to have you here this morning.
Man,
thank you for coming.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having
me. Podcast.
I love it.
I kept thinking about, I was like, who should the guest be? And then like it kept coming, Chris.
Oh man. I love that my spit is the first spit ever on this mic.
It's okay. I'm already planning to Listerine these things after every time.
You should have like the back of the I Am Second chair, people get to sign. It's like,
really?
You need like
I didn't know that.
A part of the mic that people get to initial or something.
So kind of just for people that don't know, your husband, father, director, business owner, kind of just quick 20-second bio.
Yeah, definitely. Man, where do I start? What defines me the most is I actually believe the Holy Bible is true. So I'm a Christ follower, and that has defined every part of my life. And so, I'm a father, I'm a husband. I guess I was a husband first before a father.
That usually happens.
Yeah, I have two wonderful children. I have a wonderful wife. We just celebrated 19 years of marriage. I came out of school as a photographer, still a photographer. So I started in this world taking one image at a time. And then, almost 12, 13 years ago, got introduced to motion and started in this journey of telling stories, you know, and in a longer format.
Awesome. Well, kind of the general topic for today, it's something I've come across a lot lately. Honestly, since moving down from Tulsa, it's something that I've really been focusing on, and that's getting hired more than once. I think that can play from multiple perspectives, straight to a client, like as a production company, but also as a freelancer to a production company.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it for me has been relationship, like learning what relationship means, how to nurture relationships, and how to be really attentive to those people, and much more than just a business sense, like in a very natural, just caring about the person that you're serving. I feel like being a servant probably describes it, but that was just one of the, I feel like the overall topic, and I felt like you have a lot of strengths in that area where, getting to work with Name Tag, I saw your clients love you. You have created relationships with your clients where they trust you, where they respect your opinion. You can not push back, but you can give your feedback on what they think, and they will listen to you over their own opinions because they trust. You've created this relationship of trust, and they know that what you're doing for them is what's best for them. And I think that's super.
Cool.
It's something that's super nuanced, I feel like, because it's not like something that maybe you set out on day one to do, but I think over the relationship with them, and I mean, not to mention the duration that you've had with a lot of those clients. Like JCPenney, you've been doing stuff with him for how long now?
Man, it's almost since I've been out of college. So
yeah,
it's like we're looking at 18 years.
Yeah, so you've been doing something right there with your relationships.
Yeah, and it's grown in interesting ways. So
yeah,
what you know. One of the things that you said is interesting. You said I didn't set out to do that. And I don't, you know, like I didn't go to business school. It's funny. People say, where did you learn your business? And I the church that I attend is just a church that's kind of really positive, and the pastor's kind of has a business mindset. And so because of that, there's so many principles in the Bible that we've just decided to follow in business, and it's played so well into, I guess, let me restate that. There's so many principles that we just decided to follow in life, and it played so well into our business. And so we never really set up. I never had the insight to say, I'm going to treat this client so well that they'll be a repeat client. I never thought that through, but what we decided to do was just, man, have integrity. And just simply do what we said we would do. And that alone carried us so far. And then I think the other thing, and it's interesting that I was on a call with the agency that represents Mercedes. We're doing another project for them again. And I asked this question I ask all the time in conference calls. And the owner of the agency laughed because he was like, yes, I remember this question. He said, I asked, what are you guys most excited about this project? And they laughed and called me on it. And they, you ask that question every time. And they went and they proceeded to answer it. And what he said is, what we like about working with NameTag and working with you as a director is that you constantly bring something new and unexpected to the project. And I think that is a key for life. And so every project we approach, one, whether it's big or small, am I bringing all of myself to it? Am I bringing something fresh to the project? Am I bringing something unexpected that maybe the client didn't even have in mind? And it only really has to be one thing. You know, if you can bring one thing to a project every time and plus it doesn't have to be like a radically new thing, because a lot of times a client brings you a good idea. So it's not just executing it. It's executing it in a great way, bringing something fresh to the project, that they didn't think about, and you know, it makes them look good inside of their agent, inside of their agency, or inside of their business, and then just constantly delivering, you know. So, yeah, sum it up. I think doing what you say you do, and then always strive to bring something fresh and yeah, a new creative.
There was this a while back, what, that 4 or 5 months ago, I think we were on a shoot, and we're shooting out of state. It was you, me, and Joe. Everyone else was local.
Yeah.
And we shot, I was doing kind of behind the scenes video. I was doing a whole separate video along with the shoot that we were doing. And we hired this big name DP, hired all these different people. Awesome, awesome crew. What was it, 150 people on set total?
Yeah, it was a big job.
Like, yeah, big thing. And at the end of it, we went out for coffee afterwards, you, me, and Joe. It was like 11:30 at night. And we were just unwinding. And then I don't know if I was partially tired, kind of a little bit of ignorance. I don't know what it was, but I was like, why did we hire him? Why are we paying him so much? Like, I kind of felt like I could have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And then you just straight out called me on it. And I was like, no, you couldn't have. And I was kind of shocked. But at the same time, like what you said after that, I feel like has been a pivotal moment for me, in the sense of it's been one of my cornerstones now. Like you went in, basically told me like we didn't hire him just for his technical ability. We hired him like for things like his leadership. Could you just talk a little bit about that and kind of what you told me that night?
Yeah. It's funny, probably being after a 12-hour day on set and then being late, my inhibitions to be polite. So I was like, no, you couldn't. I didn't remember that yet. So sorry about that.
No, it left a mark. I loved it.
Well, kudos to you for having ears to hear that, for sure. Man, you know, DP is such an interesting role because so much of it is reliant on ability to compose a beautiful image or to see a scene and see what light is there and to figure out how to augment that or to play that out into film. And then how am I going to move the camera to accentuate the story, to tell the story? And so there is so much of a craft in what you do as a DP. But I think what we talked about is there is so much more beyond that craft. And it's the ability to lead a crew and the ability to demand the respect of, man, I don't know what his department, what that camera department had in it, but maybe like five and five and grip and electric. And then he had, you know, we had two cameras running and they each probably had two ACs. And then we had a whole jib, like that was a whole nother department on themselves. So, you know.
Yeah, we had fly swatters. We had everything on that
yeah,
side.
Yeah, so so I think there's that ability to manage your craft, but then there's the ability to demand the respect of a crew and run them in a smooth, confident way that only really comes with experience. And it doesn't start with a 20-person department, you being able to command that respect. And, you know, the funny thing is I speak out of experience because I actually won a job early on in my career, when a DP job where I look back on it now and I was an idiot for even thinking I could do it. But I got a big broadcast project as a DP, and I was just coming out of that one man band world, which I know you mentioned you want to talk about later. But so I thought I knew everything and I knew my craft. I knew how to make an image, but I had no idea how to work with a crew and to delegate. And so there's an experience that comes with working up with having like maybe two people underneath you, having a gaffer and then an AC, and then having another camera department, or another set of ACs, and then, you know, gaffer grip, and then them having best boys, and then that experience of all that, and then the experience, and there was a celebrity on set too, so that adds another dynamic of experience of like, okay, now we're an hour behind because my lighting took too long, so it's really my department's fault. I have a producer and a DP pushing on me like we're now behind, but and being able to manage that and cool and like have a plan for how to get out of that or to get beyond that. So, man, there's something that some things can't be fast forwarded, and that learning in every experience. So like what I say, if I were to gather my thoughts and kind of coach a young DP, not at 11 at night and not so harshly, I would say that like in every little job you have, learn something and study leadership along with your craft of cinematography. Be the best you can as a cinematographer, but at the same time, I don't know, like pick up a John Maxwell book or something, or study some kind of leadership principles, because you are thought of a leader in a department like that, and you're called on surrounding yourself by people, and you're responsible for their decisions and how they run. And then also too, I think the biggest coaching I have for young people on set is it's okay to fail. Man, we embrace mistakes. So, and you've heard me say this before on set, is like failure is okay if we're learning from our failures. But if we make the same mistake and then make it again, that is not okay. And I have so much willingness to fail, because if I fail, that means I'm trying. You know, like when I grew up skiing, and if I had a day where I look back and I'm like, man, I didn't fall at all today, it wasn't like yes, it was more like, dang, I must have not pushed myself. Yeah, exactly. So I think little failures shows that we're pushing ourselves, and that's good.
Yeah,
we just have to make sure we're capturing our learning and studying it. And so being able to reflect at the end of the day with a crew and say, hey, what could I have done better?
And I feel like there's such a trend lately where everyone and their brother's mother calls themselves a DP now. And it's like, to me, I've almost clearly defined the line where it's like, I am not a DP unless I can lead a crew of X. Like, to me, being a DP is it's not about, oh, I can make some pretty images. Like, that, you're a camera operator. You're a good camera operator.
Yeah, it's a good point.
A videographer. Like, to me, a DP holds this... I just feel like I have this respect on that title now, where it's like, there is some stuff there that you just have to... You have to really take time and be intentional about.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned to me earlier that one of your guests is going to be Juan Ramirez, who is a local gem. He's a really amazing gaffer here in town. And he's had the opportunity to work on some really big shows. And one of the shows he worked on, ask him about the camera op that designed the whole look and feel of House of Cards. They have like a visual Bible they go by. And it's a camera op that designed it. And I asked Juan, and I actually called the guy himself and said, why aren't you the DP? Why don't you call yourself a DP, or why don't you work as a DP? And because you are, I mean, in a sense you are. And he said his interest, you'll have to have Juan tell it to you, and because he has a better relationship with him, but his perspective was that I know how to make a look, I know how to design a style for a show, but I don't want to lead the crew. I don't want to be responsible for that leadership of the crew. So I'm staying at the operator level. And I think that's one of the really cool things about our industry is that you can make a career out of being an AC or a gaffer, a grip, and you don't have to go for the top tier, you know, producer, director, DP. And you can have a lifetime of like being the most amazing operator and achieve some really awesome things, you know? Yeah. So whatever you pick, you can excel in it. So, but that definition that he had played so much of a role in designing and defining what House of Card looks like. But he didn't call himself the DP. He wasn't the DP on the show. Yeah. But I think the interesting thing is that all the DPs that rotated through there, they all answered to him.
Yeah.
Visually, but not to running the crew. So, yeah.
Kind of flipping perspectives here. Being a partner, name tag and all that, what does it look like? What stands out to you about crew? Like going back to getting hired more than once, what kind of things in your crew would make you hire them more than once?
Man, that's a great question. And it's kind of the question that you wish all crew thought of when they went into it. I'm going to cheat for a sec because I want to. So as a director, I think line producers probably have a different answer to this than a director. But as a director, you know, the main crew that I have influence over hiring is my keys. And then they pick the crew underneath them. So it's the keys I interact with. And what I mean by keys are, you know, like my DP, my art director, my wardrobe stylist, those type keys, the heads of the department. And so what I want from them is the ability to listen to my brief, listen to my concept, listen to the goals and the objectives for the day, to process them, to deliver on what's asked, to bring something fresh and new to the table, to work hard and then plus it in some way, surprise me, bring a new prop that I didn't think about, bring a new style of lighting or a different light to the, or a different shot, a different lens, something I didn't have in my own wheelhouse, but that's why you're there.
Yeah.
And wow, it's kind of funny as that sounds like the same steps to me keeping my clients.
I was just talking with a siding and trim guy. I was talking to him just about business, and he was telling me about all this data science stuff that he's been doing and all that. And like I was telling him, like honestly, I feel like I'm a subcontractor. I'm a contractor. Yeah. Like that's what I am. But I'm also running my own business essentially. And I think a lot of people working in this industry don't realize how much they're running their own business, and they. Not that they have a brand, but they kind of do.
Yeah.
And it's like, you need to realize this. We need to, I feel like it's so much more casual between like me and an agency almost, but in reality, we should treat it with the same importance of as if they're like an end client, I would say.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting point you say, Brandon, is that we're a brand, because the reality is that with Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and you know, your Facebook account, everything you do speaks to who you are as a brand, and all that stuff is public and all that stuff lasts forever. So when a line producer is looking to hire a crew member, I mean, like, they straight up look at, I've seen line walk by a line producer. I'm like, what are you doing on Facebook? And they're like, oh, I'm checking out this crew member before I book them. And so, like, being aware of what is your brand and your appearance before you even have a face-to-face conversation.
I mean, it's almost like Google reviews for the person. Dude. Their social media is essentially what it is.
Well, and the stuff is that it doesn't go away. So being aware of that. And then when you're on set, man, just showing up like nobody's business and just being there and not being into your phone. And, you know, we in this interesting dynamic where you're... the project you're on is awesome, but then you're always hoping for the next bigger, better project. And it, like, it never stops. Like, when you're doing this little one, you want this next bigger one. And then you're doing that next bigger one. Then you have a vision for an even bigger one.
Yeah.
But it's a trap. And the interesting thing is, like, the job you're on right now, the job you have right now, is the most important job you have. And if you kill it on that job, then... the next job, the bigger job, will come naturally. But if you're constantly focused on that next bigger opportunity and calling in, per se, the job you're on now, you're not going to get that one.
Yeah. So I was just talking to actually Juan, and I was asking, we were chatting on set, and I was like, what keeps you passionate after all these years? And he's like, you know, like, I just keep reminding myself, I'm only as good as my last job. Mm. And I was like, that's kind of dark. Not going to lie, Juan. But at the same time, like, I mean, it kind of keeps you in the moment of never phoning it in. As much as even, I feel like someone like with his resume could probably do somewhat.
Yeah. And it's interesting is that this industry, there's a lot of great things in it. And I also feel like there's a lot of like bummer things in it. And I understand the purpose of unions and things like that. But I do feel like that sometimes the presence of unions has that ability of providing such job security and such reliability is that the hustle is gone. And so I do see sometimes when I travel to towns that are very union based is that it's not normally like in your keys, but it's in their crew, like your best boys and stuff that, you could tell, man, it is just another day punching the clock for them. And there is no hustle and no passion in the job. And that's unfortunate, you know. I want to say one other thing. I met with a young director, editor a few days ago. And he had a really solid reel. And then the question arise when he left is what, like, would you rep him as a director at NameTag? And, you know, it was a pretty solid no. And it wasn't because he didn't have really good work. The reason was there was nothing new or fresh. And so I think something I would say to young filmmakers is that playing it safe is playing it dangerous. And so especially when you're young and especially when the stakes aren't as high, take risks, take creative risks, develop a voice. Have something about who you are and your work that's unique and fresh, that gives yourself a voice and a position and a platform that's like unique. And in doing that, actually, you plant your foot in the ground and you'll actually garnish more attention. So take creative risks. You know, definitely take creative risks. That's one of the things I would share.
So switching topics. You started a while ago. You started building a Sprinter, G&E, and production and all that. And I thought it'd be really cool to share about that because I love it and I try getting it on almost every job I use.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea of the idea of Shiny Board never started as Shiny Board. The idea came out of honoring our clients' budgets and that idea of, how do I get as much of my client's money on screen? And what I mean by on screen is like, you know, like better lighting or, you know, more props or a better location, you know, spending that money on those things instead of production, you know? And so one of the things that always annoyed me is, man, we would always spend money on renting a box truck and then a PA driving somewhere and loading it full of tables and chairs. And then, you know, after the job is over, the same ritual of returning it. And so it actually didn't start with lighting and grip. It started with just darn tables and chairs.
It's the production truck. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. The idea was like, what if we just took the kit that we needed every job, the stuff that we used every job, put it in a sprinter in the neatest fashion that we could possibly do it, and have it sitting there as like a, you know, a go bag. And every job we had, we saved the client's money by not having to spend that production.
Yeah.
It's almost like spending money on producing the production. And it's such a waste because you don't see it in the final piece. It's all just feeding a crew, you know, tables and chairs. And so then we carried that process over, is that a lot of times our budgets are limited. And, you know, it's like, can I have a proper tech scout, or can I have a nicer location, and can I shoot with an Arri Alexa or something like that? I was like, well, I'd really like to shoot with a nicer lens package and have a nicer location than getting a tech scout. And, you know, maybe my DPs and gaffers would like differ, but so we would get to set, and like, you know, my gaffer would be like, well, if I would have got to look at this place, I would have actually ordered a different lighting package, you know. And so you live through a few of those, and I started thinking, okay, same concept with the sprinter package. What if I built like the perfect lighting and grip package that could go on every job, and like these situations, like what would it look like if we walked into a location that we hadn't seen before, but had all the tools to effectively do our job? And so I reached out to my favorite gaffers and grips and said, hey, give me a list of your dream kit. Like, if you had something to always
take on every job.
Yeah, what would you take on every job? What would be the fixtures you would take on every job to the gaffer? And then what's your perfect grip package? And like, just being ignorant, because if, you know, I don't fully know all those departments, I turned around and gave those to a photographer friend that I knew from college that has outfitted a few sprinters. And I always liked the idea of a sprinter, because so many times we pull up in these neighborhoods with like, you know, a 5-ton grip truck, and it's like the neighbors throw a fit, or you're shooting in downtown and like they're pushing carts for like a mile. It's just waste of time, you know. It goes back to respecting clients' budget. So I thought about like, what would it look like if you could get it in a sprinter? And you know, my guy just came back and said, this will fit. And what it ended up being is essentially a 3-ton grip package and a ton of really great Arri fixtures and some LEDs and some HMIs that all fit. And then what ensued over the next 6 months was this passion. It was like, okay, if we're going to get this to fit, how are we going to make it fit? And how is it going to be the most efficient possible? And in that process, we really actually just did two things. We gave ourselves the freedom to break all traditional rules. And we weren't really setting out to build a rental company. We were trying to figure out, how do we build the very best tool for us as a filmmaker? And in that process, I think we just allowed ourselves to ask the question, why is carts designed this way? And is it the best way? And why are rags organized a certain way? And so we questioned everything, and actually we came up with some really innovative ways to do our carts, where they're kind of self-contained, and a lighting cart contains stands for those lights, as well as the stingers and the sandbags needed for that. So a cart comes off the truck and it's like, it's ready to go. And then the idea too is like, almost everything on the truck should be a cart, you know, so for those locations that you have to roll off. And it has really become like a Swiss Army knife of lighting kits for us, that we have that confidence that we can walk into almost any location, you know. And besides like a really big gun, like an M40 or, you know, a bigger light, then we have what we need to cover it. So, and then also too, just the decision that we weren't going to skimp on anything, that like, if our gaffers asked for, you know, an expensive light fixture, then like, you know what, we should just go ahead and splurge. Man, we just love this community. We really believe in the Dallas market, and we really believe in the crews here and supporting part of Name Tag's culture and inversely. So Shiny Board's culture is just supporting young filmmakers and supporting people in the industry, big and small. And so, man, we would love just anyone listening to this just to give them a 10% discount on the first rental, you know. And compared to other people in town, the truck is super discounted already, because it's kind of meant to be a one package, like non-negotiable type of thing. Yeah. But We'll give any of your customers that just mentioned, hey, they listen to the podcast, 10%. And then just to be supportive of, you know, the filmmaker community too, we'll do an extra 10% to the podcast to help you get going, because awesome. Someone's got to pay for these really cool mics and headphones.
Thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a pleasure.
For sure.